Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Home Wilmer is provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, conserving the past to inspire future generations of dreamers and preserving the legacy of Julia Morgan. To learn more about how to become a member and experience authentically curated historical events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst, from swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guest house overlooking the Pacific Ocean. These experiences are unparalleled in their historical accuracy and grandeur, and you too can savor the experience by becoming a supporting member of the Foundation at Hearst Castle. To learn more, log on to foundationathearstcastle.com. I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me for a visit with Dale Sky Jones, Executive Chancellor at Oaksterdam University based in Oakland, California. Oaksterdam, an integral part of the City of Oakland's Cannabis Trail program, is commonly regarded as the world's first cannabis college. The university offers an array of online courses from growing and bud tending to extraction and manufacturing, along with small business startup guidance. Oaksterdam also serves as an advocate and consultancy for municipalities and states when they draft cannabis industry regulations and tax statutes. Come along and join the conversation with Ms. Jones as she shares the fascinating tale of Oaksterdam's past and present programs and initiatives.
Hi, my name is Dale Sky Jones. I'm the Executive Chancellor of Oaksterdam University, and we are sitting here in beautiful Oakland, California.
Very cool. Tell us about how and why Oaksterdam University started, and then, of course, is it an acronym?
Oaksterdam has roots that go 26 years deep. They're the first two cities to regulate over-the-counter sales of cannabis, Oakland and Amsterdam. So it was a self-coined name, this ragtag group of people that really just started out wanting to help patients find medicine, safe access. And it quickly turned into one of the biggest court battles in U.S. history.
Wow.
The Oakland Cannabis Buyers Cooperative was the official name, the OCBC. And Jeff Jones, the founder, he lost his father to cancer as a teenager. And he went full bore on dispensing cannabis for patients here in the Bay. He was granted the ability to do so by the city of Oakland. He was actually made an officer of the city for medical cannabis dispensation.
And what point in time in history was this?
So this was in 1996, and he got started before Prop 215 was passed. So he started doing this before the law was legal, and yeah, he was part of the group that collected signatures to legalize.
You're wild, yeah, bird.
Indeed. Ultimately, a person dispensing on Broadway with the approval of the city and holding things like press conferences about it quickly caught the attention of the federal government. And after an investigation, he was stopped. He was raided under the Clinton administration, shut them down. He won in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. So it was legal to dispense for about 6 weeks in America if you were Jeff Jones in the OCBC. They quickly brought it to the Supreme Court. And he was the first to go through the Supreme Court on this issue of dispensing to medical necessity patients.
Uh-huh.
He lost. And in the process, he became an educator. He started an ID program that the city adopted. And soon after, the state wrote SB 420 based upon the model that Jeff Jones and the OCBC began in the first place, the collective cooperative model. And a lot of California state laws and laws since then have been based on our founders. But he turned to educating. And when he was stopped, he turned over what he was doing to his grower from Texas, who picked up the mantle. And Richard Lee is who started the Blue Sky Dispensary, a nursery, Oaksterdam University, and also paid for the first statewide voter initiative in American history in over 30 years to bring this issue to the voters.
Wow. And the outcome of that was?
We lost again. But, you know, we won because we decriminalized more people in that single act of bringing the voter initiative, because in California, we wound up with not one but two October surprises. And one was Schwarzenegger, the governor at the time, finally signing a bill to decriminalize cannabis possession, which resulted the next year in 9 out of 10. We're talking about an 87% reduction in arrests for marijuana possession the very next year.
Wow, and point in time in history, that was when?
So in 2010, we put Prop 19 in front of California voters. We did almost win, and in the process, we created the coalition, including the NAACP, Latino Voters League, the Black Officers League and Latino Officers League, as well as the UFCW. We brought the labor unions in, a multitude of various community leaders, because they realized that the drug war was a war on them. Part of what also happened in the process of getting political is 2 years later, in 2012, the Obama administration and four federal agencies raided Oaksterdam University and all of Richard Lee's businesses that day, including his home.
Wow.
So on April 2nd of 2012, I took over the school. Another long-term employee took over the dispensary, and a third took over the gift shop. It was a breakaway. It was the first time that the school operated independently as just a school. Mm-hmm. I joke that our money no longer grew on trees. And getting political definitely made things difficult. I'm not allowed to be a nonprofit, for instance.
Wow.
One of the most important results of the raid is that the school was no longer intimately attached with a cannabis dispensing or cultivation operation. It allowed me to truly be just a school. I used to joke with Richard, I wish we could divorce the school from the cannabis operations. I never dreamed that was how it was going to happen. When the federal raid happened, this is under the Obama administration, they took everything but the office furniture.
Wow.
And it was in the last week of a semester. Ironically, the day before, we were supposed to teach harvest and raid preparation. You can't make this stuff up.
Yeah.
And so, amazingly, most of the students and the faculty, it was a lawyer that was supposed to teach that day, they showed up and they volunteered their time and continued to do so while we pulled ourselves up by our bootstraps, continued to teach those students that had already paid Richard. You know, that money was long gone. Finally started figuring out how to move the school forward.
And how about laws, the implementation of legalization laws? Since then, since the Obama year.
What I'm most proud of that I worked on in the last decade was the policy work. We schlepped up and down the state of California, and let me tell you, I put more miles on my son than a 57 Chevy driving up and down the state, just getting policy considerations from community and stakeholders. And we were able to push forward policies that were ultimately adopted into law that didn't just allow for the taxation, control, and regulation of cannabis sales in California. This is already the largest cash crop. People were growing, buying, and selling it anyway. It's right. Just we're finally using the taxes to buy books instead of guns. Mm-hmm. You know, we're putting our priorities where not everyone is bad, just the ones who aren't permitted and paying those taxes. So we start to delineate otherwise tax-paying and law-abiding citizens from those who are truly part of violent drug cartels or gangs that are, you know, trafficking people and other substances. And what I'm most proud of is putting people first and ensuring that we put some of those tax dollars back into the communities themselves that were hardest hit from the war on drugs. These are communities of color, poor communities. We're talking about people of color who have been targeted indiscriminately over marijuana.
For generations.
For generations.
Yeah.
And I want to make a very important point here about the law. In the Constitution, we added the amendment, the 13th Amendment, where we outlawed slavery, except one case, convicted of a crime. If you are a criminal, we are allowed to enslave you as a human being and put you to work for pennies on the dollar. And so we're not allowed in America to make it illegal for you to be black or brown. But we can tamp down on those laws where you are more likely to be arrested, you are more likely to be caught, you are more likely to be policed, and you are more likely to be put in prison and enslaved.
Which was a reality for over 150 years.
It's still the reality today. We have wealthy white people making money in the shadow of the very prison that people are still sitting in for nonviolent crime, in some cases, RICO, where they were not even caught with cannabis. They just got fingered by people who didn't want to go away for the rest of their lives.
Wow.
And a lot of times it's wives and girlfriends with kids on the outside.
Talk to us about, in recent years, there's been a change in the laws for growers and for dispensaries. Tell us about that.
The most exciting law change of recent note is the change in cultivation tax.
Uh-huh.
This is huge. This is huge across the board.
Explain.
First and foremost, for small business, we are expecting small cultivators and small businesses to compete with very large corporations and multi-state operators that have acres and acres that they've pulled together. And the cultivation tax was owed prior to the seed being put in the ground. And so you're asking small business owners to upfront pay a tax on a crop that they have not even started to grow. Never mind purchase their inputs, their labor, the other costs, including costs of goods sold for additional companies down the supply chain. Because what you're talking about is a tax on cultivators and a tax on manufacturers. And depending on how manufactured that product is, it might change hands more than once. And every time you're adding another layer of cost.
Yeah.
Except now you're adding it on the VIG, you're adding it on the tax. And by the time you get to the register, legal cannabis is twice as expensive as illegal cannabis.
And that's true today?
It's true up until the day we changed the cultivation tax law just this past week.
What? Wow.
What? Yes, it's huge and it's recent. And, you know, time is broken for me. So let's say it just happened this month. And it's really exciting because allowing the removal across the board allows the legal industry to better compete with the illegal industry. Mm-hmm. They're already having to pay extra taxes and fees to the state, to locals, to all of these other things. Just to the cost of doing business legally is extraordinarily expensive in California. Ask any business owner.
Yeah.
I can tell you for one. But at the end of the day, the cultivation tax got compounded so that by the time it gets to the register, legal businesses are competing with not legal businesses, not just on the sticker shock at the cash register versus your dude, you know, that'll drop by. But it's also hard to tell for people to even tell which businesses are legal. Many folks think their local dispensary is a tax-paying permitted dispensary. And so the other thing is helping businesses be recognized as legal operating businesses and help drive consumers in their direction without making this sound fun for kids.
So bottom line, cost-wise for the consumer in real time going into August 2022, is it follows that the retail cost would be lowered if you're not having that multi-layer taxation.
In theory, the prices will go down and there's going to be a little bit of market settling. There's still going to be some corrections. Mm-hmm. The entire supply chain needs to make corrections at this point. The entire modeling that's been created over the last few years just got a major reset. Uh-huh. And so not just with pricing and where along that supply chain are people going to try to carve out margins that didn't exist previously.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, folks think you're rolling in dough if you own a cannabis business. That's not actually the case. Folks are operating on extraordinarily tight margins. So I'm not going to say that the cost at the register is going to drop that full 100%
right
down. But we do know that the end result is going to be that legal businesses can compete and customers should absolutely feel the difference in their pocketbook.
Let's loop back to the university.
Sure.
And what you teach and where?
Oaksterdam University first started with our campus here in Oakland, and we started campuses in a few other locations, Los Angeles, Michigan, and North Bay. We've done a lot of seminars around the country and courses around the world, but it was the pandemic that took us from a few online classes to lifting our feet and going fully virtual.
Oh, interesting.
And yeah, what's amazing is you don't have to fly here anymore, and oftentimes the cost of getting to Oakland was 3 times the cost of taking our classes. We try to keep it really cheap for folks so that they can afford our classes.
That's so you're all online then?
We're all online. We are now based in your living room and also on demand. So we offer different certification levels, and you can take those learning outcomes self-paced on your own time, 2 a.m. in your boxers, or you can stick to a schedule and have a cohort. We ask you to put on pants for those and come on camera and interact with your fellow students and teachers that are from around the world and experts in their industry.
How fascinating. Give us an example of some of the courses.
Our key certification programs are horticulture. Of course, we're not just a world-famous horticulture college, but we also offer the business of cannabis. And that is really for any professional who's trying to interface with the cannabis industry. So a CPA, an attorney, a marketing professional, or someone who's trying to engage in the business of cannabis. If you're actually trying to get a permit, we suggest you always start there. After that, we also have another program on manufacturing and extractions. And those are the big three that have the meatiest programs. They're also, with Golden Gate University, counted for 18 credits towards their degrees.
Oh, that's really cool.
It is.
And extraction is oils? What does that mean?
When you are cultivating cannabis, the medicinal properties, the psychoactive properties, are all contained in the trichomes around the bud, the flower of the plant. And there are ways to remove the beneficial components from the plant matter. And there are many different ways to do that. There are chemical processes that include closed-loop systems that are very similar to how we decaffeinate coffee. There's also manual extraction, things like cold water hash, where you might agitate it with ice water, and there's no chemicals whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So there's different ways to extract the beneficial components, including your method of consumption. If you were to take cannabis flowers and put them in a vaporizer, you are vaporizing, but you're extracting through heat. You're boiling away those beneficial components and then inhaling them. So what you're really just trying to do is, through chemicals, through heat, through time, remove the plant matter, unless you are enjoying your leafy greens. There are amazing benefits with cannabis as well to just simply eat raw cannabis. It does not make you high.
Wow.
But you have amazing antioxidant,
like
anti-inflammatory, antibacterial. Yes.
That's really fascinating.
Indeed.
Yeah. Tell us about, let's say you wanted to grow your own crop. Do you have courses in that?
We have courses for both our home growers, because we do feel that once you get involved, you will become addicted to growing. It is amazing for folks, even when they don't consume. People that cultivate for loved ones find purpose in that cultivation. It might be growing next to their tomatoes. So we just launched a home grow program for those folks. And we had to do that because we just overhauled our traditional horticulture classes to meet the moment in getting commercial and highly regulated. And so we've expanded and enhanced our other cultivation program for those that want to go into commercial cultivation, the rigors and pressures around everything from pest mitigation to improving your yields. So whatever kind of grower you want to be, we do have not only a program for you, but also coaches and mentors to help you through when things go wrong.
That's really fascinating. Are you guys the go-to place, university, for the topic and subject?
I like to think we are. Uh-huh. We're the first in the world to establish a formal education program, and we've continued to enhance and improve not just the subject matters and electives. We offer free programming for everything from advocacy all the way through opiates and the exit from opiates and pain through cannabis. We try to always focus on public health and safety, and we've been trusted by governments, politicians, and importantly, their staffs from around the world. More importantly, though, we're trusted by our community. And we've had not only deep ties with our community and offered a multitude of scholarships with veterans and folks from the social equity community, but we also are blessed to have contracts with several cities to execute those services on behalf of those cities.
Explain a little deeper on that, city adjunct.
Certainly. We first started educating cities here in Oakland back in the 90s. Jeff and his attorney went in and taught not only the tax department how to tax cannabis, we won an award for that, but also the police department about what medical cannabis is and how to discern a patient, how to treat them, sensitivity training. And what's remarkable is he managed to walk out of that police station with a box of cannabis. So our training started early with cities, and we've been training with governments for a long time, including the second largest tax collection agency in the world, the California Tax and Fee Administration. We trained their agents and auditors also how to tax cannabis. It was a two-day intensive program. And since then, we've won several contracts, starting with the cities of San Francisco. Right now, the largest contract and, frankly, the largest city in the world working on this, the city of Los Angeles. We've been working for them for the last year and a half to build their own learning management system. And we're moving into one-to-one coaching. We help with everything from workforce development and helping employers navigate hiring and resourcing their talent all the way through onboarding and even exiting without a lawsuit. We operate job fairs and virtual events, as well as business training from exploratory all the way through operational.
What would be an example of a job fair?
Last spring, we worked with the City of Los Angeles Department of Cannabis Regulation and another vendor, Wadeco, to execute a full career fair on site at the Los Angeles Technical Trade College, the LATTC, where we had about 26 companies that were hiring in the Los Angeles area, for the most part, cannabis businesses from various license types, although all ancillary businesses were welcome as well. There are good faith hiring requirements for operators. You have to have a certain percentage of your workforce, either transitional employees. Transitional might mean transitioning from lack of a home or transitioning from being a foster child or out of incarceration.
Oh, interesting.
As well as a focus on local hiring and hiring social equity individuals.
So that's integral to the whole model. Then.
Indeed, indeed. Yeah. And Los Angeles DCR and the director, Dr. Imani Brown, has done an amazing job within the social equity program under the leadership of both the former director, Kat Packer, and the acting director, Michelle. They have really focused on how to bring meaningful services and listen to what people are asking for and being responsive to the needs of the social equity applicants. None of this happens as fast as anyone wants it to, but the fact that they are building it is phenomenal. And as folks find out that it exists and that they qualify for these services, that you have world-renowned coaches that the city is sponsoring for free for you as a social equity business to help you figure out your work plan, formulate your lease agreement, all the way through talking through with an HR professional how to exit a difficult employee if that happens to be the case.
And that's within the umbrella of the university.
This is under the umbrella of the Los Angeles DCR Social Equity Program.
Okay.
And Oaksterdam University helps fulfill all of this.
Like
yeah.
A consultant.
We couldn't do it without them.
Yeah.
Yes.
Back to Oakland, California, you said all your classes are online. Do you still have in-person contact with people in Oakland at your offices?
We do through another one of our city contracts, as a matter of fact. And so I mentioned San Francisco and Los Angeles. I also have to mention, close to my heart, Palm Springs. We do work with them as well. And we were blessed to have won the contract very recently with the city of Oakland. In fact, these services launched today. It's very exciting, where we're able to provide on-site one-to-one offerings for social equity verified applicants. We work with a local social equity incubator. They're called Oakland Equity Collective, and they are what's often called a shared kitchen. It's a shared facility that has up to 6 businesses that can come in. Mm-hmm. They help with everything from supply chain and white labeling and figuring out formulations. So we are able to do those types of courses. And we do foresee having the city itself host in-person events as we move out of some of these COVID restrictions and it's easier to get person to person. For the most part, we found our equity participants prefer being able to jump on a Zoom real quick because they also have a business to run and parents to help and kids to pick up.
But just time.
Exactly.
Alone, yeah.
Exactly.
How about the retail dispensaries like right here in Oakland? How do you work with them today?
We have very special relationships with some of the dispensaries here, and one that I would call out is Blunts and More. Tucky Blunt is alum of Oaksterdam, and he went through way back in 2008, if I'm not mistaken, back when our business program was still just 2 days long. And a lot of what we do, whether it's for with folks like Tucky and making sure that we're tapping into the expertise. I know, for instance, that Tucky is teaching for another cannabis school. And part of it is we also collaborate with that same school. And so we call it collaborative competition. There is a bigger fight out there in changing the federal law and educating people, reaching out to various communities. And it's so important to have ambassadors and stakeholders from these various communities be the bridge, whether it's with academia like Pacific College of Health and Medicine or Golden Gate University, some very important relationships, Community College of Denver, or we're talking about our, you know, legislative and community. You know, for instance, I've been parliamentarian of my PTA for the last 2 years. It's important to find different ways to bring aspirational individuals in contact with those that have been doing it for a long time. And that's where the existing operators, whether it be dispensaries, manufacturers, or cultivators, one important thing that we do is mentorship every week on Clubhouse. We have anywhere from 5 to 15 subject matter experts, attorneys, real estate, and of course, cannabis business experts sit for 2 hours and just answer people's questions for everything from policy to business to sometimes just needing a bit of a personal cheerleader saying, yeah, this is hard, but you can do it and it's worth it.
Handholding.
Indeed. Yeah. It's so important. So many folks come to business with a very rich network and often with wealth to back them. Mm-hmm. And when we are working with social equity applicants, by definition, they have it harder. There are more hurdles. There is more friction. And we have to acknowledge that. Yeah. This is not a handout. This is not even always a hand up. It's mm-hmm. just a ticket to work your ass off.
Yeah, but at least paving the way.
Indeed, and hopefully bring in generational wealth for your family mm-hmm. and create supply chains where we are bringing wealth into communities. This September 24th, here in Oakland, the city of Oakland has helped sponsor the Fox Theater. The historic Fox Theater is going to show a documentary. This documentary covers the arc of history of how we changed the law, and it was quite accidental, but they captured a decade's worth. These are the founders of how we got here. And it's also a love letter to the city of Oakland, where all the change begins, not just Oaksterdam, but from farm workers to the Black Panthers. And so the mayor, Libby Schaff, mm-hmm. is going to join us, as well as some other important luminaries. Councilwoman at large, Rebecca Kaplan, helped make all this happen. And we are going to host a huge party and documentary to finally uncover the story, not just of how we got here, but the path to change the federal law.
That's really cool. And where and when again?
September 24th mm-hmm. here in Oakland, California at the historic Fox Theater. And I hope you'll go to oaksterdamuniversity.com and find out more about both the school and the nonprofit and the event on September 24th here in Oakland. My name is Dale Sky Jones from Oaksterdam University.
Dale, what a pleasure. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you for being here.
My pleasure. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Oakland, California. We'll see you here.
Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, conserving the past to inspire future generations of dreamers and preserving the legacy of Julia Morgan. To learn more about how to become a member, log on to foundation@hearstcastle.com.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory, produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomascwilmer.com.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So yes, please support your local NPR stations.